Good day, and welcome to the Randstad Holding third quarter 2009 results conference call. For your information, today's call is being recorded. At this time, I'd like to turn the call over to your host today, Mr. Robert Jan van de Kraats. Please go ahead, sir.
Well, thank you. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the conference call to discuss the third quarter results of Randstad. I'm here together with Ben Noteboom and Bart Giernotte and some others to support us. We're going to take you through the agenda and elaborate on performance, on the financial results and the outlook, and we'll conclude with a summary. I'm now moving to slide five, which is looking at the market development. If you look at the graph, you can see we're moving away from a slide to more or less an ice cream scoop, which is a different pattern from the one we have seen over the last quarters, because then it was sliding down from one quarter to another. It's been a rough ride, which started already in the fourth quarter of 2006 in the North American market, in the U.S. market also, and the Netherlands volumes went down as from the first quarter of 2008. Also, we have to be careful reading the data because the comparables of last year are getting a little easier. If you look at the slide down at the page, it reflects the Randstad growth. It's the Randstad growth over the various months. I'd just like to point out the black line. The black line, which is the North American market, which is clearly improving. Please note that the zero line is at the very top of the graph. The summary is that we see our main markets surpassing the trough. The staffing markets are gradually improving, so that's light industrial, logistical, and clerical business, especially the light industrial and logistical business seem to show some signals of a pickup. Let me also point out that we are very happy with that. The light industrial and logistical segment is an important segment to us and also a very attractive segment. This is the typical pattern that one would expect going through a downturn and coming out of it. The professionals market, and also that is typical, we do see stabilizing on balance. The next slide, number six. In the third quarter of 2009, as I mentioned, we see the revenue trends gradually turning. We also see increased gross margin pressure, which is largely offset by the continued strong cost management. Revenue amounted to 3.2 billion, which is 28% below last year, same quarter. The revenue trend has gradually improved through the quarter. As we've indicated in the press release, it moved from -30% to -26%, and especially general staffing and in-house staffing services are picking up slightly, in line again with the seasonal trend, but also in line with what we'd expect to be the typical development from a downturn. The professional segment is more or less stable at the moment. We have seen increasing pressure on gross margins in this quarter. We've often elaborated on this point in the previous quarter. What we see is something that continues on the back of the developments in the first and second quarter. The commercial pressure that has intensified is what we see in most of our markets. A large part of the contract renewals is now behind us. We have had many big clients that have renewed the contracts, that have opened up the contracts in the last quarter, and we believe that we have seen a large part of that. Operating expenses came out at 503 million underlying, adjusted for one-offs, and that is 25% lower than the 670 million in the third quarter of last year. Our outlook reflected 520 million, but during the quarter, we have sped up some of the initiatives due to the gross margin pressure we did see in the market. Around 1,370 offices is what we have less than at the end of the third quarter last year. If one looks at it on a quarterly basis, on a sequential basis, the decline is around 150, and roughly half of that is a reclassification in the Australian business, where due to the rebranding and the fact that everything is now under one management, we've been able to combine. EBITDA reached 93 million, which compares to 242 last year, a margin for this year of 2.9%. Then looking at a couple of markets, first of all the Dutch market on slide 7, it's keeping up a good level of profitability. The organic revenue growth per working day, and then minus 23, it's a weird combination, so the decline is minus 23, and that has been more or less stable through the quarter. The late cyclical market is stabilizing, so the Netherlands one could consider as a late cyclical market. Tempo-Team and Randstad are more or less in line with the market, and Yacht is somewhat below, and I would say that's also typical because that is the professional segment. One segment in the market that that continues to do very well is contact centers, so call centers, for example. The gross margin is under pressure also in the Dutch market, and we see most of the impact in the large account segment, which I would say is typical. The EBITDA margin came out at 7.1%, and it very much reflects the fact that the cost base was managed well. Typically, and also traditionally in these days, idle time management is a very difficult thing to manage, and what we see, not only in the Netherlands, by the way, but you also see it in the German business, is that we have been very effectively managing idle time. The trend, the business trend, the revenue trend in the professional segment is still down. Payrolling business has now largely been divested, and I just want to point out that Human Resource Solutions business goes beyond the payrolling business. This is purely the payrolling business that, as announced, we have now largely divested. The French market on the next slide, slide 8, executing the social plan are ready to move forward. The organic revenue came out at minus 31 in the third quarter, and then we see that general staffing and in-house improved somewhat versus the second quarter of 2009. The professional segment is lagging, however, but healthcare is holding up well. We have initiated a large marketing campaign in September that will continue into Q4, and you will see the number of branches that we have added, 7 in-house branches. We are looking here at new clients and transfers, and we are aiming to convert more going forward because that is a way to provide dedicated service to our clients and also for us to make an attractive return. We also see increased pressure on pricing in the French market, and I would say that whereas we have strong leadership in the French company, one cannot break iron with the hands, is what we say in the Netherlands, but trying to reorganize the company has been an extensive process. We have applied for a reorganization and a social plan earlier this year, actually in January, and we have only started the execution of this plan in the course of the third quarter. The voluntary part of that plan led to a reduction of 226 people, and that will continue into the fourth quarter, and that is the quarter in which we expect to finalize the reorganization. EBITDA margin as a result of relatively sort of late cost reductions came out at 0.9%. In the meantime, DSO did very well, also a little help from a friend here. It's the government's decision that invoices should be paid in 60 days. We now have seen an 8 days improvement year on year and a 2 days improvement compared to the last quarter. The German market on slide 9, that is some relatively good news because we've seen a volume improvement through the quarter. Revenue is still minus 33 in the quarter, but through the quarter it has improved, and the improvement that we see is in the industrial segments, including chemicals. Gross margin pressure is controlled, is not intensifying at this point in time, and as I mentioned before, good idle time management is extremely supportive to the bottom line. Operating expenses substantially lower year on year, but we have seen a strong sequential productivity improvement. We have mixed performance in the professional segment. On the one hand, placing freelancers in the IT business, the group business, shows continued growth, whereas we do see pressure in the engineering business. The EBITDA margin came out at 5.4%, and that is a lot better than the previous quarters. We also, if you look at the total numbers, have included a one-off in the German results, which relates to and accrual last year in the field of social securities. Then we're moving to slide 10, the UK market. Having discussed some relatively good news from Germany, the UK market remains weak. In the UK market, one really has to distinguish between the staffing and in-house business and the professional segment. It is clear that staffing and in-house is easing, and we have some we see some volume improving at new clients at the end of the quarter, but all in all, the organic revenue growth came out at 29% negative in the third quarter. The professional segment continues to weaken, whereas the healthcare segment continues to perform well. The engineering and construction segment remained weak. And September, remarkably, was a relatively strong month for finance. We're planning further cost reductions, especially in the professional segment, and we arrived at an EBITDA margin of just below 0.1%. The North American market on slide 11, we're outperforming the market here. Strong sequential profitability improvement is what we see. Organic revenue development was 26% negative, but also here staffing and in-house are clearly doing better. We do see an improvement from 30% in this segment negative to 20 at the end of the quarter, and also one can say that the U.S. professional business and Canada have at least stabilized. The gross margin continues to be under pressure. It is clearly competitive pricing in this market. And as from early next year, we expect the increases of SUI, which is the state unemployment insurance, to go up, to increase as a result of higher unemployment in the U.S. And that will be a challenge to charge it to our clients. We do see very good DSO management here and an EBITDA margin of 2.5%. On slide 12, some information about our market share in the third quarter. In the Netherlands, we're close to market. The one that's lagging here is York Netherlands, which is the professional business. In the French market, we are well below market, and that is something which is related to what I just shared with you. The long time it took us to implement the social plan, we're now moving full force forward, and also will increase our marketing activities in the fourth quarter. In Germany, close to market, minus one. But this is combined with very strong performance management, because we do see an EBITDA of 5.4% in the quarter. The United States, a good result, 4% ahead. Belgium, we are just slightly below market. We've rolled out a new IT system in the Randstad business in Belgium. We'll also do the same in the fourth quarter in the Tempo Team business. And normally that has some impact on the external focus of people, as we have seen in the past in other operations within the group. Good performance in the UK and Spain and Italy. That's something you have seen before. It's the deliberate non-renewal of some contracts, because we did not want to continue those. These were businesses that came with the merger with Vedior. 13 is the revenue growth, the various segments, and I would suggest that you have this as background information. You can see here segments that have developed better than average, whereas others have developed worse than average. Then moving to the financial results and the outlook, slide 15. I've already discussed the gross margin, but that is mostly impacted by the temp margin decline and by the reduction of permanent fees, which is more or less stable. The underlying operating expenses improved by 25%, and the announced tax refund of 152 million, the delayed payment of Dutch VAT impacting at least 80 million, and some positive developments from operating working capital, to which I'll get back at the cash flow statement. The income statement on the next slide, 16, income statement Q3. And while you're looking at these numbers, I thought about November 07 again, the investor and analyst day, where we discussed a normal downturn and said, well, that's minus 10 for 1 year and again and again. And now what we see is that downturn scenario showing itself in only 1 year. So it has been, as I said, a very rough ride. I think all the data have been discussed already. And I'd like to add, and it's not printed here, that net finance costs are now 7 million compared to 34 million last year. And that is reflecting both the lower level of net debt, but also the fact that the current Euribor for 1 month stands on roughly 0.4, so 40 basis points. And then our spread is 75 basis points. So that is a very low interest charge that we carry in the P&L. The gross margin development in the third quarter, on the next slide, the development from 20.6% to 18.8%. First of all, the temp margin, the pressure, which we have discussed already and about which we have said that we have already taken a substantial part of that pressure. The permanent fees, which have an impact, they declined 55% organically, which is very much in line with previous quarters. And permanent fees are now 7.3% of gross profit versus 11.2% last year. Then we have HRS impact, but I'd like to point out the temp mix, the 0.1. This is a positive impact, but we more or less hope that this will flip to become a negative, because typically getting out of a downturn, the light industrial and logistical segment are the ones that do pick up, and that means improvement, that means more revenues. And we look at this also in monetary terms, so to us that would be good news. But that is a development we expect going forward. And finally, at the bottom, the HR business has some positive effect here. And the fact that we have now divested most of the payrolling business does not mean we're not active in this field anymore, because we'll even continue to expand our replacement business, our reintegration business, and so forth. Then we have slide 18, the development in the corporate employees and outlets. And as you can see here, decreases all over the place. It's the natural attrition that is the main contributor to those reductions. Second one is reorganizations, and all of them, we have a separate slide on that, are on track. The corporate number of FTEs in Belgium increased from Q2 to Q3, and that is due to the additional usage of temps in our own organization, which is common in the third quarter, because people go on holiday in August and we replace them like that. And we have the rollout of IT in Belgium, which also has absorbed additional manpower. Outlets in France are stable, but underlying we see a decrease in branches, which is netted with some new in-house outlets. In Australia, the reclassification I already mentioned to you. The restructuring charges on slide 19, you can see the summary here. It's the slide that we have shown before, and the aim in Randstad is what is said at the bottom, to see the earn back, the payback on those restructuring charges within 12 months. And as you can see here, everything is on track. Moving to the consolidated cash flow statement, that is one that is impacted by some one-offs. First of all, the cash flow from operations before operating working capital, 214 million. That's very positive, but in there we have the 152 million included. That came back from the tax authorities after having discussed this. This relates to, let's say, high-level tax planning, but it relates to the impairment of the VDR acquisition. We have a release of working capital, 157 million, and that is the result of the VAT payment in the Netherlands, which is even a bit more than 18 million. It's also impacted by a reclassification of one item. We have the French penalty, which has now moved to the short-term liabilities from provisions. And it's also impacted by the fact that DSO did well in the third quarter, and some timing issues with respect to accounts payable, which is quite a cocktail of elements that come together here. Well, I would say investments in the company in line with what we have discussed before. So nothing special furthermore, only that we have 355 million reduction in the net debt level. Then on slide 21, some comments on the debt facilities and the repayment schedule. We're now at a leverage ratio of 2.4. Our gross debt is a bit north of 1.7 billion, and we felt that the facility was a bit too much, also because we have to pay commitment fees. So we've made it a little more efficient by taking care of the reductions. You could say repayments, but effectively it's a reduction of the facility. So by now we have already carried forward the November this year, May 10 and November 10 reduction of the facility, which means we'll have savings of the commitment fees in the field of $1 million a year. The total net facility is almost 2.3 billion still. So if we start to grow, we'll have room to maneuver a lot of it. We also have the standby securitization facility organized, as we have announced in August. Again, that is just a standby facility because it is more costly than the financing we have in place now. But just in case we might enter into a completely different scenario again, this will help us to create some room to maneuver. There's no refinancing need within Randstad before 2013. The outlook: organic revenue growth per working day improved from minus 30 in July to minus 26 in September, and these trends are continued into October. As said, we do see this gradual improvement in staffing in-house, and we see a stabilization in the professional segment. But please note that our visibility remains very limited. Gross margins remain under pressure, and we'll continue to align our cost base whenever necessary, and again, mainly that happens through natural attrition. We expect operating expenses to be lower again, but that is then compensated by the second point here, that's the increased marketing spend due to the timing of some marketing campaigns and also following the reorganization in France. Most of that amount is going to be spent in the French market. We do not see a significant working day impact in the fourth quarter of 2009. Christmas is always an uncertain phase in our books, and we expect around 10 million of additional restructuring charges for the fourth quarter, relating to further alignment, especially in the professional business. So the summary on the final slide is that we do see revenue trends gradually turning, pressure on the gross margin, strong cash flow so far. Going forward, there's not a lot of special items anymore, so it will be strongly related to EBITDA and our DSO management, our working capital management. And we'll continue to focus on cost management, productivity, the market campaigns, market share related to that directly, and DSO. So that concludes the presentation. We'll now move to questions and answers.
Thank you, sir. The question and answer session will be conducted electronically. If you'd like to ask a question, please press the star or asterisk key, followed by the digit 1 on your telephone keypad. Please ensure that the mute function on your telephone is switched off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. We will take questions in the order received and we'll take as many as time permits. If you find your question has been answered, you may remove yourself from the queue by pressing star 2. Once again, please press star 1 to ask a question. We will now pause for just a moment to allow everyone to signal for questions. Thank you. We'll now move to our first question from Tom Sykes of Deutsche Bank. Please go ahead.
Good morning, everybody. I just wanted to ask on the first of probably about 50 questions on gross margins, but the can you give any sort of indication as what the flow through from the renegotiated contracts actually is into the sort of fourth quarter and the next quarter? And perhaps what your sort of feeling is and what's happening in the spot market as well relative to the sort of contracted market, please.
Morning. What we said in the press release is that we have a strong impression that by far the largest part of the renegotiations are behind us, but also to a large extent they are already in the margin for Q3.
Okay.
Not extrapolate the reduction in gross margin from Q2 to Q3. I think that would be far too pessimistic.
Okay. And
spot market, the impact is considerably less. I think that would have no big impact on the total margin.
Okay. And in previous downturns, is the large account repricing an iterative process, or it tends to happen once and then people move on and we're looking upwards then rather than downwards?
As you described before, what we always see is the moment the market turns, volume-wise, margin keeps up well, and then with the delay we see pressure on margin, exactly as we've seen this time. What we also see is the clients have had the tendency to try and negotiate longer contracts than before.
Right.
So whereas in the past they would tend to go for a 1-year contract, now they might try and get a 2- or 3-year contract. But that's more or less what happened.
So does that mean the recovery the other side is a bit slower in gross margins, or it just you don't expect that has had a material effect in the recovery in gross margins when demand comes back?
Well, without forecasting what's going to happen to the margin, what we expect to happen is if the market continues as we see it developing now, that would mean that we would have a bigger chunk of blue-collar business. That means the gross margin will go down, but as you all know, not necessarily the profitability, because our productivity will be higher. Then a bit later, if the flex market would have recovered, somewhere in that process also the permanent placement market will recover, and that can have a potentially very big positive impact on the gross margin. So it's more a mixed effect than just trying to pinpoint it on one trend like the contracts.
Okay. And is there any chance you can give us some sort of indication of the level of improvement going into or in October, and perhaps what was actually the fall off in the year-on-year rates in September last year to October last year? If you could perhaps remind me, please.
I'll do that, and then we'll move on to the next.
Sure.
I think it's fair that everybody has an opportunity to ask some questions. From last year, September, we had -6, and October -10. So yeah.
Okay. Next question.
Thank you, Tom.
Thank you.
Thank you. We'll now move to our next question from Shane Brandwood of UBS. Please go ahead.
Morning. Just wanted to ask about revenues and the chart where you show the month-on-month trend, or rather year-on-year growth, but for each month in recent months by market, slide 5. And I just wondered, can you talk, I mean, obviously, you know, when we look at a lot of these markets in a normal year, you know, the months in Q3 do tend to see a pickup versus Q2, so there is some seasonality there. I'm just wondering, if you try and look through that seasonality, which markets do you think you're actually seeing a genuine pickup in, and which markets is it more just you've seen a seasonal pickup?
The biggest increase is, or improvement if you want, is in the staffing market in the US.
Mm.
Through the quarter, that goes from about a -30, whereas Q2 was -35 to -20.
Yeah.
So that's a huge improvement. We see a big improvement, and of course it's always difficult to differentiate between our own results and markets, because not necessarily are they exactly the same, unless we have a high market share.
Yeah.
So staffing in the UK is improving, we've seen Spain improving, albeit that they came from a very, very bad level, obviously.
Yeah.
We've seen Germany improving, so all around, if you look at many of the markets where we are today, we see in general staffing markets getting better.
But you see that as genuine improvement rather than just seasonality?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
And I mean, if you try and kind of annualize, you know, the month-on-month growth which you're seeing, for example, in the US, I mean, what would you say the annualized growth rate is that you're seeing in US blue collar at the moment? Do you think you're maybe seeing an annualized growth rate of 5%, 10%, more than 10%?
Growth rate.
If you annualize month-on-month trends, what do you think you're seeing? Yeah, I mean, if what was going on in the U.S. over the last 2 or 3 months was to carry on for a whole year, do you think you're seeing growth of around 5%, more than 5%?
Fantastic picture, of course. Because if we improve with 10% every quarter, then by the end of next year, we'd be 40% up. I don't think that's going to happen.
I mean, it's a tough question, I know, because it's hard to strip out seasonality. But anyway,
it's a fantastic picture. Thank you for the free shine, man.
Yeah, no problem. I'm going to avoid questions.
Okay, we can move on to the next question. Sorry. Yeah,
well, do you mind if I just ask one more, which is just the question on debt? And obviously you've done very well in the quarter. I'm just wondering whether you could give us some sense of how much you think you might also be able to reduce debt in the coming quarter. Is a net debt of 1 billion euros feasible by year end, do you think?
First of all, you know, the key worry about debt is the covenants, and by now we've moved away from that. If you look at the net interest charges, it's all very limited. But I made the point during the presentation that going forward will be very much connected to the EBITDA development and our working capital management. And that means it will be much more gradual than we have seen it going so far. So, and I suggest that we stick to two questions each.
That's great. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you. We'll now move to our next question from Toby Rouse of Merrill Lynch. Please go ahead.
Hi there. Two questions. The first is on the cost reduction plans in France. Can you give us a clearer indication of exactly when those are expected to impact?
Yeah, we have set aside 25 million at the beginning of the year. We made the point that that would be coming back within a year. So effectively, we should see a quarter of that coming through in the various quarters. However,
is that Q4 this year?
Increasing our marketing spend in the French market.
But will that come through in Q4 this year? Is that?
Yeah, 5% has come through in Q3, and the other part will come through in Q4. So it's roughly divided. But again, the marketing spend are going to increase.
Okay, thank you. And the final question is, could you try and give some color on what sort of a gross margin impact you expect from Sui? And just how much you expect to be able to pass on to clients, what's your experience in the past in that respect?
Yeah, it's a bit early to do that because, as you might know, first of all, it depends on the mix. So, refer in per state, there are different increases. Second of all, what you see is that in some states they announce the SUI rate only in March, with a carry back to January 1. So that's also difficult to forecast. What we do know, of course, is that given the increase in unemployment, it's going to go up. So we have been anticipating this move and have been busy trying to negotiate the compensation from clients already since a couple of months. So that should have its effect, whereas in the past we usually were too late, to be honest, to be able to compensate it, and then we were running behind the developments all the time, but now we try to be more proactive. But we can't quantify it yet. I'm sorry, again, the mix and the time at which it is being announced is too uncertain.
But you would expect it to have a less severe impact than it has in the past because you've been more proactive. Is that what I should take away from what you just said?
Yeah, that's what we work hard for. On the other hand, of course, customers are pushing back harder because they also are in a difficult situation. So
okay.
The game is on. So we'll see.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you. We'll now move to our next question from Aaron Rambokas from Kempen. Please go ahead.
Yes, good morning, gentlemen. Two questions as well. First of all, on your statement that costs will only come marginally down in the next quarter. How should we read that statement in relation to your ambition to get your EBITA margin to 4%? Or should we see that you still have the natural attrition of personnel which will not be replaced? Is that an impact on your cost base going forward? That's the first question. The second question is on idle time. Can you just remind us what idle time has been doing in Germany and the Netherlands and what we can expect for the fourth quarter, assuming that, for example, within Yacht, Q4 is the strongest seasonal month. Seasonal quarter, which would have a positive impact on idle time. Thanks.
Yeah, your first question, Arun, I think it is important, looking at cost development, that we don't manage the company on a quarterly basis. We are trying to have a longer-term focus here. So the fourth quarter is specifically impacted by the marketing investments, which we have discussed with you, and the fact that we have increase the speed of implementation of some of the reorganizations. That means some of the reorganizations that would have come up in Q4 have now been implemented in the effects of reorganization, I should say, have come into Q3. So going forward into next year, you'll see us adjusting costs whenever necessary. And that is an art rather than a science, because we have to make sure that in these segments where the decline is reducing, we'll make sure we have sufficient people to enjoy that growth and to prepare for further growth. So you'll see us adjusting the organization wherever necessary. The 10 million that we're setting aside for ourselves in Q4 is a sign of that.
For idle time, it's at a very, very reasonable level. It is actually at about the same level as when we were growing pretty fast. So we are very happy with the controls we have in place to minimize the effects there. So that today is always an issue, but it's not an issue as in that it has an effect on the results.
But should it, so my question was, should it improve in Q4 on the back of seasonality within Europe, the Netherlands, for example? Is that the right assumption?
I should have clarified that. Since it is at a low level, we don't see any room to improve, but it should also not get a lot worse.
Okay. Thank you. Very careful for the Christmas period, and the same as in the U.S. You can identify these things well in advance and prepare for that.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. We'll now move to our next question from David Tyer of RABO. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Yeah, good morning, gentlemen. The first question on cost cutting, to what extent are you concerned that you also, let's say, hamper some long-term growth prospects if you are cutting to the bone? And the second one on your interest rates, any plans to fix them at these kind of levels? Thanks.
Yeah, long-term growth. Although, by the way, I had expected a different short sponsor of AZ, David. Where are you? But anyhow.
Are you interested?
Long-term growth. Eh?
Are you interested?
Because you were here, you're the same. And no, we don't expect impact on long-term growth. As you know, we have been pretty precise on remaining our network, in the sense that we stay present in the markets that are important. We've had some cases, as we've also clarified before, that where we left some markets because we had an isolated branch, and then it doesn't make sense. But by far the biggest part of branch closures have been in cities, areas where we have more branches and where we combined them so that we did not leave the markets. We also still today, as we've clarified also in Q2, have excess capacity available to be able to grow. So it's more a definition, it's more a matter of defining where the growth opportunities are and make sure that we target our sales efforts in that area. So that is the critical factor is not that we would have minimized our opportunity to grow.
Okay, David from RABO.
Yeah.
on the interest rate development, the policy remains as is. And that means we very much enjoy the natural hedge we have. If we would have fixed the interest rates in the past, I guess we would have spent 60 million more on an annual basis at the moment. So it has proven to pay off very well, and will continue to do that. So we do not have plans to fix the interest rates, and we do not foresee in our numbers very significant economic growth. By the way, if we would see major growth coming through, we'll rethink it once more, but that is not what we see so far. And we have our own indicators on the table for that.
Okay, that's clear. Thanks.
Thank you. And now move to our next question from Mark De Boer of RBS. Please go ahead.
Morning, gentlemen. It's Mark from RBS. Two questions. First, are you willing to share with us what the profitability has been throughout the quarter? I think you have been indicating before in Q2 what the kind of June EBITA rate was. And then secondly, can I make out of your comments on France that you would expect to go back to kind of market growth in France from Q4 onwards, as you have just been starting the commercial initiatives?
What we won't share the quarterly profits because operationally the monthly profits, because operationally we do have them obviously, but there are a lot of things you look at the end of a quarter and then assess what provisions to take, what happens with social security, etc. So that I think would hardly be reliable information to build any conclusions on. What we have seen, of course, is that we are 5% below market in France. This is due to a large extent to the fact that we announced a reorganization on January 3. We actually had a couple of hundred people that already had a new job but have been sitting and waiting for us to conclude the negotiations with the union so that they could cash the money and then leave. As you can imagine, those are not the most productive employees we have. It also is not very favorable for the atmosphere in the company. That is now behind us. We are now also pushing, indeed, with a very heavy marketing campaign on television, radio, etc., etc., sales actions. So yes, we should improve, but I do not expect that within one quarter we will be at market. That usually takes about two quarters before you see the real payback of these sort of efforts.
Thank you.
Thank you. We'll now move to our next question from Frank van Dijk of SNS. Please go ahead.
Good morning, gentlemen. Two questions, please. Could you give some more flavor about gross margin per region, which is above group level, which is below? And secondly, could you give some more information about the restructuring at professionals? Are they fully in the UK or are there other regions where restructurings are planned?
Yeah, restructuring is a mixed basket. What we don't want to do is to actually reveal plans that have not been communicated with the relevant people in those organizations through this conference. So we'll have to clarify after next quarter, but unfortunately we can't be more specific here on those topics.
With regards to the gross margin, David, we don't disclose that anymore, but it is obvious, sorry Frank, it is obvious that in markets where we are having a large share of large clients, you see more impact, for example, in the French market and also in the Dutch market.
Okay, but could you give some more flavor about where you see exceptionally more pressure on pricing in some countries and where you don't see that?
It's across the board, but mainly in the countries where we have, a big position in the large client segment. And that relates mainly to the markets I just mentioned.
Yeah. Which is also important to notice because obviously later in the cycle usually the smaller companies become a bigger part of the sales, which should help to compensate for that again.
Okay, thank you.
And maybe, Frank, maybe to add to that, is that of course you'll see a relatively larger decline in the countries where you have the highest margin. So I mean in France, on a relative basis, the gross margin pressure is there, but of course it's less than the 110 basis points because you start from a lower level.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. We'll now move to our next question now from Konrad Zomer of Cheuvreux. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning. First question is on your dividend policy, particularly in relation to the two mandatory repayments that you brought forward. Did you consider saving that money to possibly pay a dividend over 2009? So maybe you could update us on what you think about dividend payments. Second question is on the gross margin in the Netherlands. We heard from Empower last week that they talk about one particular competitor in the Dutch market offering massive prebates. We heard from USG yesterday that they do not really see that much pricing pressure in the Netherlands, so we get a little bit of a mixed message. Can you maybe tell us, have you ever offered massive prebates yourself, and what's your view on pricing in the Dutch market going forward?
Well, to your question about dividend, the dividend policy, as we have stated before, remains unchanged. So we are really aiming to pay out a dividend which is a certain percentage of profitability, and the ambition to pay out a certain amount if the profitability allows for that. However, we've also concluded that the balance sheet should support that, and then we made the point that the leverage ratio of net debt versus EBITDA should be below 2. That is a clear hurdle that we've put in place and which we'll continue to have in place. A discussion on the amount of dividend, and in the end it's a shareholder decision, but the discussion on dividend will take place in the month of January.
On the margin development in Holland, so I'll leave aside the mix because obviously that has a huge effect. As you have seen in our historical numbers, the gross margins potentially to be achieved by companies like Yacht are considerably higher than the average. So the mix impact is huge on the gross margin for the country. We have shared during three years that we saw internationally one company actually that was most aggressive in the large contracts, that used to be Manpower. So So I'm happy they also see somebody else now. That's equals the playing field. I don't see, of course, I guess if we're going to research, we'll have offered rebates somewhere. It's actually usually more the negotiated margin than rebates, but it's not something that's very unusual given the point in the cycle where we are today. So I don't see any unusual movements here. I'm also not very pessimistic about the fact that we would not be able to reach to actually maintain the very high level of profitability we have in the Dutch market. So I'm not worried about that too much, to be honest. We have a lot of discipline in place now, and mix is going to be the biggest driver of the margin.
Okay, and just one quick follow-up. What percentage of your Dutch business is in the public sector?
It's between 15 and 20.
Thank you.
Thank you. We'll now move to our next question from Laurent Brunel of Exane BNP Paribas. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good morning, gentlemen. Two questions, if I may. Follow-up on gross margin. Can you maybe elaborate a bit more on the French market? And what is the part related to pure pricing? And can you maybe tell us a bit more between larger content and SME? And secondly, beyond Q4 and, let's say, year comps, when do you expect top line to turn positive, especially in the blue collar industrial segments? I guess it's a tough question, but if we can have a bit more about it.
Referring to the also for this second part to the French market.
Sorry. Yeah.
On the development for the blue collar, are you referring also to the French market?
Yes. No, at the group level, in terms of return top line to positive at the group level.
No, we don't reveal the margin developments anymore per market. So we won't do it also in this case. As we mentioned before, the influence, actually the reduction, of course, is also determined by the level of room there is. In very high margin countries, you saw that the impact was bigger than in markets like France, where the margin is very, very, very small. What we've seen in France is that the automotive, although still below average, has picked up somewhat, so that's a reasonably good sign. But that's about as specific as we can get. Again, I'm sorry, if it would have been Greece, then we would have only talked about France, but in this case, we can't do that.
Okay, and in terms of top line forecast?
Excuse me?
And in terms of, let's say, top line forecast moving forward, when do you expect to turn positive in the industrial segments?
We don't give a forecast, and in the end, for us it doesn't matter in that sense, that we manage on actuals and not on expectations. So whatever we expect, for us, doesn't play a role on how we actually manage the company, because that's too risky. But we don't give a forecast, as you will have seen, outlook on revenue developments.
Right. Maybe can you say what is the current impact of the gradual restocking, and do you believe it could help you?
I think this should be the final question. I'm sorry, but because this is for no, we cannot differentiate between the effect of the destocking that we have seen and the structural development of market.
Okay, thanks.
We very much respond to market circumstances rather than study them.
Thank you. We'll now move to our next question from Toon Tobisa from Fortis Bank Netherlands. Please go ahead.
Yes, good morning, gentlemen. I have a question on the contract renewals. Can you indicate how the contract renewals have been in staffing in-house versus professionals? Because I can imagine that you had more contract renewals in the staffing in-house business and maybe some more to come in professionals. And the second question is on these new contracts for in-house. Do you see very different conditions there from the better years? Especially since productivity is a main issue there, how much headroom do you have in those contracts? Thanks.
You're right on the observation that obviously the renewals, the number of contracts absolute number is bigger in staffing as such as in professionals. However, we also start from a lower base, so as a percentage, there's not a lot of difference. Second thing I should mention is that we, within contracts, we also have quite a number of contracts where we actually cover the whole range of services. Within those contracts, obviously, we differentiate in pricing between in-house or IT engineers or other specialists. So that is very important to note. Of course, we don't have one price there. On in-house, I didn't exactly get what your question was. I'm sorry.
These new contracts you see in-house, because you mentioned that you have also new contracts coming in at in-house. How do these the conditions on these contracts differ from the good years? Since especially in-house, the productivity should determine your profitability. So I can imagine that there's little room for margin decline in the in-house contracts.
Yeah, the biggest challenge instead of margin here is of course that clients who would usually have, let's say, 300 or 400 temps on one side, drops to in a number of cases to zero, and then get back to 20 or 30. So that's why, of course, the model doesn't work. So then we transfer those clients back to the branches, because then we can have higher productivity because we combine it with other branches. The moment that business will have picked up again, and the volume would justify us having our account specialist at the premises of the client again, then we'll refer them back. If you look at the margins of the new contracts, this is the same variation we have seen before. We've had actually a number of very, very large global clients. And as always, the bigger the client, we are very bad salespeople, for sure, me included. The bigger the client, the stronger they negotiate on margin. But nothing that I think would make it for us impossible to have a reasonable return on those clients, because otherwise we wouldn't have made the contract.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. And now move to our next question from Thijs Berkelder of Peter Kahn. Please go ahead.
Hey, good morning, gentlemen. Two questions on Germany. Can you give us a bit of grip on the monthly revenue development in Germany and what you see there in October? And secondly, OPEX Germany, and what can we expect there in Q4?
Yeah. If you look at the monthly development in Germany, look at the numbers here. We have an improvement of about 10%. It's actually on slide 5, at the right bottom side.
Yeah.
That's where you can see what's happening per month. That's
it. And the OPEX?
The biggest effect is actually to we've saved a lot of costs in Germany before, as you can imagine. And the biggest improvement comes from the top line development compared to Q2, if we compare Q2 to Q3. The reduction in cost is not spectacular. It's about a bit more than the average of the 5% for the total company.
Yeah, in terms of the revenue development, September was clearly the better month, and that continues into October.
Okay, and from an OPEX perspective, when do you think you need there to maybe do some extra marketing to really make use of the market potential?
In quite a number of companies, we are starting to increase marketing spend again, because we know that that has a very positive effect. It's a cheap way to sell if you want. Germany is one of those, but the impact is not going to be that material.
Okay, very good.
Thank you. And now move to our next question from David Hancock of Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Yes, good morning. The first question is on pricing in the perm business. You're seeing some increasing price pressure on the temp side as volumes stabilize and then start to pick up. Would you expect to see something similar in the perm business as well? Indeed, are you seeing any pricing pressure at the moment?
By far the biggest challenge is the volume in perm and not the price.
Okay, thank you. And then the second question is a follow-up on the public sector. So you gave us the size of the public sector business in the Netherlands. Could you just talk about your other bigger public sector markets and maybe say how much of the group as a whole is public sector, and just talk about the trends that you're seeing in that bit of the business at the moment, please.
For the group, that is around 5 to 10%. But really, the Netherlands is a key market there. In the French market, we have not been allowed to provide our services to this segment, like in the Belgian market, and that is to be opened up due to recent deregulation. By the way, same applies to Spain and Italy. So it is very much the Dutch business, but also some business in the UK and in the US. And I think in Australia, it's also an important client of us.
And in terms of the trends you're seeing there, is that business still growing at the moment, and do you worry that that comes under further pressure sort of over the next 12 to 24 months?
No, not big growth. What we usually see, if we look at historical trends, then the government's reaction is always a bit slower than in the statement than that of companies, which I guess is not a surprise. So you usually see the pressure on their budgets occurring 1 or 2 years after a downturn in the economy. And then usually what you see is of course that by then the other volume starts to increase again. So we hope for the same scenario this time.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. And I move to our next question from Mark Zwartsenberg from ING. Please go ahead.
Yes, good morning. A question on the gross margin. You see that the TEM margin is down from the second quarter to the third by 50 basis points. Can you confirm whether this is all related to the contract renewals? That's my first question.
Q2 to Q3, Mark.
Yeah, your TEM margin went down. The negative impact was now 1.1%. It was 0.6%, if I am correct, for Q2. So that's 50 basis points more pressure on your TEM margin.
Yeah, what we in a flat market usually see is that in Q3 the margin is slightly below Q2 because of holiday workers, etc. It's very difficult to determine exactly where it comes from. So I would say that a part of that 0.5 is due to seasonality. I would expect a smaller part, and the majority of it being pricing pressure.
So it's only 30 to 40 base points related to the contract renewals. That's correct, roughly. Yeah.
I think I've been pretty precise, thank you.
But are these contract renewals? You said most of it was in Q3, but how did that develop through the quarter? Did everything happen at once, and what percentage of contract renewals is in, and what can we still expect?
Yeah, but obviously it started earlier than Q3. We also had contract renewals in Q2 and Q1. These negotiations can take quite some time, which is fine with us. We like it to take as long as possible if we're talking about a reduction in margin. So it's an ongoing process that has been going on for basically in every quarter. And the majority, of course, started or were closed in Q2 and then in the course of Q3. So as we said, we come to a percentage against it, because that would also, by the way, be misleading, because the percentage of contract is not necessarily equal to the volume we're going to have. But the biggest part has been renewed. So what we're trying to say is that you should not extrapolate the development from which you've seen in Q3 to Q4. We don't expect the margin to go, let's say, to the 17% level.
We expect that is still quite a gap also. More than 30, 40 basis points also. But we should, for a contract renewal, say, put in another 10, 20 basis points extra, and that's it, apart from all the mix elements which still have to feed through. That's the picture.
Mark, you should put in some effect in Q4. That's all we're saying.
Okay. Period. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We'll now move to our last question from Mark De Boer of RBS. Please go ahead.
No, there was a follow-up, but it has been answered already.
Okay, good. Well, thank you very much then. This concludes the conference call on the third quarter results. Thank you very much for joining us, and we'll see you again in Paris in the month of December. At least hopefully we'll see you again. Thank you very much. Have a nice day.
Thank you. That will conclude today's conference call. Thank you for your participation, ladies and gentlemen. You may now disconnect.